thanks for coming. It's been so much fun for the two of us to think about it, pray about it, stand before you, answer questions, try and practice in our own family what we're talking about up here. And every week, there's always a challenge or two that's like, whoa. Tonight, we're going to talk about two things. We're going to talk about the emotional life of our children. And obviously, that varies. And there's certain stages that we're going to talk about that. And then we're going to talk about the importance of community in the midst of that and what that looks like. So we have a lot to cover. I think we're going to easily get through all of it. But I certainly want to also, just as I'm speaking, if you have questions about something, as always, raise your hand. I want to make sure I'm clear on certain things. So anyway, we're going to dive in. Emotional life of our children. I would like some of you just using a word to describe the emotional life of your children. And if you have more than one child, just say as many words as you want. But what does the emotional life of your children look like? And again, we're just describing emotions. So sad, happy, you know, joyful, depressed, you know, you name it. So I'd just love for some of you just to go for it.
Roller coaster.
All right, that's good. There's highs, there's lows. And that can be in a given day or change each day. All right.
Delightful.
Yeah. Delightful. Good. Keep going.
Intense.
All right. Is that it?
Selfish.
Okay. Nobody else probably understands that at all. Self-absorbed. Keep going.
Unlearned.
Unlearned? Okay. What do you mean by that?
Well, they don't know how to control them yet.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
Yeah.
They're very powerful.
They're powerful.
Yeah, good power. Good power. Mark, I love that, man. Mark just looked away. Like, okay, don't even comment. Help, help. Yes.
Unpredictable.
Yeah. Sometimes it can be predictable that it will be unpredictable. Chris?
Chaotic.
Okay, good. Others?
Volatile.
All right. Yes.
Innocent.
I like that. Guilty. Is that an emotion or a declaration?
Boom.
Boom. Got it. Okay, now let's have some fun. Talk about yourself. What emotion right now is most likely to control you, at least for a little while? Right now, like as a parent, not your kids, not your spouse, you. What emotion are you kind of experiencing right now?
Fear.
Okay, good. Not necessarily good, but yeah, it's one we relate to. All right, fear. Keep going. Do this fast.
Anxiety.
I made you anxious by saying fast. You know, anxiety. What'd you say?
Guilt.
By the way, before I forget, because one of you is going to feel really guilty, your child, I think, is going to be blessed. Downstairs, they've made a video of their activity. If your children are in the kind of elementary age program, it's really sweet. And off camera, so the camera is showing kids playing and talking. They've interviewed kids, and they didn't change their voices. Like, oh, my parent, you know. So it's just their voice. You're gonna recognize your child's voice. I don't know anybody's children's voices except my own. My kids didn't answer any of their questions. They're great, great questions about the prodigal son, because that's what they've been following. The story. It's been awesome. And one of the questions is, has there ever been a time when you, essentially, I'm paraphrasing, you were promised something that your parents didn't give you. And somebody's in trouble, you know. And I won't tell you exactly the details of what happens, but let's just say a promise was made if a certain, in a certain sport, a goal was made, and there's probably not many children playing hockey, so it's probably soccer. And the promise was if you score, you get ice cream. And then the little child, I won't be specific, it was a girl though, said, and my nothing mom or dad didn't get me one, and I scored 3 goals, you know. And then the wonderful leader named Jennifer said, how did that make you feel? And the little girl chuckles, says, I was a little frustrated. You're gonna hear that if you go to our website and then you click on this email, this Vimeo video, then you put in this code. That's the code, so write that down. PIP stands for Parenting in the Present, then 2016. You can watch the video. It's 3.5 minutes long. It's really cute. If that is your daughter, you need to go get some ice cream. With them, a lot of ice cream. Again, no judgment coming from me, but that word guilt made me think, oh, that would be something we might feel guilty about. All right, keep going. Other emotions you're feeling right now. And some of you are like, well, I want to know if that's my kid. Shame. All right, keep going. Right now, what are you feeling? What emotions? Come on. All right, trying to be consistent. It's not easy. What else?
Uncertainty.
Okay. Again, the question for y'all that just came in is, what emotion essentially are you tempted to be controlled by, you know, right now? I don't mean like in the next 30 minutes, but just right now in your life, this is kind of where I'm at. Be real. This is really important. So I'd like for 5 or more people to say it. Say one. Say what? Okay, stretched. Just, yeah. I heard one more first.
Distracted.
Yes, okay, I thought I heard that. And then fear. Yep.
Frustration.
Okay.
Incompetent.
Okay. Yes.
Unprepared.
Baby on the way. Yeah, that's a good feeling. Now watch this. How many of you have a child that's well beyond a baby on the way? Raise your hand. How many of you have one moving in towards middle school age? How many of you feel unprepared? So just, it's something you're going to feel the rest of your life. All right? And that's not a bad thing. All right? I had a conversation with one of our pastors today about his adult children and some stuff going on there. And I was just like, it's so interesting. The principles that we've been talking about in this class, he was essentially, and he hasn't been here, listen, he was really spitting back the things that we've been talking about in regards to trusting in the Lord, not sure what's going to happen, wanting to control. It's really amazing how God uses our kids and will use them until we go to be with Jesus or he returns. He's going to use our children to cause us to trust him. So let's move on. Emotional life of our kids. I'm going to talk about 3 primary emotions because these are the ones as a pastor that I deal with the most in families or with individuals, and certainly the ones I dealt with most with students, okay? And the emotions are sadness, depression, which is going to be a stronger form of that. And I'm going to talk about that in a minute. Underneath that category, I'm going to talk about suicide a little bit. And then I'm going to talk about anger, okay? So that'll be the emotional discussion. Then we're going to move into talking about community. So sadness. As I talk about this, remember, emotions are a part of God's design. So the Lord made us to be emotional creatures. So we are. We have moments of absolute joy and delight. When your child was born, you felt that. When your child disobeys, you feel a different emotion. So we have these incredible range of emotions that God has given us. They are part of the way he created us in his image. Now, God's emotions are perfect, but God has emotion. Okay? The fall brought corruption to our emotional life. And so emotions, sadness, joy, anger, these sweeping responses to things have all been impacted by the fall. When I say the fall, I mean sin, you know, the original sin. And because of that, there are reactions, wrong responses to all the different emotions. We can become so tied into an emotion that unless we feel something, we don't really think it's true. Some of your children are not going to feel love for God. And they're going to wonder whether he exists because they don't have the feeling. And a lot of that just has to do with their personality. Literally, it might just be that they're just kind of, they're not a big feeling person. But other people that they're with are. And they'll talk about the love they have for God and the zeal. And they're like, no, I don't really have that. And so you're going to be working with how to help them to not make an idol out of something that really isn't the way they're hardwired. Does that make sense? So when we talk about emotions, we need to remember they've been impacted by the fall. Some people have, they're emotionally stunted. Like they're almost like just, I don't feel anything. That's not good. That's a part of the fall. Others are hyper emotional, and that cannot be good. Okay? So the fall has impacted our emotional lives. But the good news is the Redeemer is redeeming our emotions. He's redeeming our emotional life. He can teach us perspective and self-control in the midst of emotions that can sway one way or the other. That's very, very important to remember. Because depending on your personality, you may have one view about emotions as opposed to someone else's. And the way in which we see God and his view of that is what matters most. That's why some people on a Sunday morning want to raise their hands and worship God that way. That is not wrong at all. And other people don't. That's just not what they're about. Chances are that's kind of their temperament. There's one man I see Sunday after Sunday, and I don't think I've ever seen him sing. I don't think I've, and I know the man loves the Lord. I know him. I don't think I've ever seen him sing. Now, some of you sing really loud, and some of you are like, if you were at the 9:30 service, you heard me. They left my mic on. He got fired. But that's not supposed to happen. And he didn't get fired, by the way. We laughed about it. I didn't even know. I just kept going, all right? And, you know, my daughter told me. She's like, you know, they left your mic on. When? During the song. I was like, oh, wow, okay. Maybe I'll get fired. So it bugged me. And I went to this man. I said, you know, you never sing. He was like, yeah. I said, how come? He goes, oh. I said, do you care? Yeah, I love God. Then the Holy Spirit gave me a question. What do you listen to on the radio? Talk. I said, like talk radio? Yeah. Do you ever listen to music? No, I don't really like music. It helped me. I'm like, okay. You know, I love music. So it's like, you know, I can feel. That's not his personality. Not right or wrong. Does that make sense? Same thing with your kids. Your child may have a really, really different personality than you. They may be more like your wife or your husband. You know, but it could be very different. The Lord is redeeming all that, and he's going to give you perspective on that. Okay, so that's setting the stage for us talking about sadness. All right, sadness is different than depression. Depression can reveal itself in sadness. But sadness is an emotion that your child has when they're simply downcast. And that's not bad. One of the things you're going to hear me say over and over today is let your child's emotions, age appropriately, reveal their need for God. Reveal their love for God. Okay? We want our kids to be happy. Right? If I asked every one of you, what do you want most for your kids? The predominant answer would be, I want my child to be happy. I said that from the very beginning of this class. Most every parent in the world, if it's the right culture, would say the same thing. I want them to be happy. Some people create extra biblical phrases like, God's not interested in your happiness, he's interested in your holiness. I hate that line because it's unbiblical. God's deeply interested in your happiness. And if you seek holiness, you'll be happy. So we create these false dichotomies with that kind of language, okay? But when our kids don't look happy or aren't acting happy, we want to fix it really quickly. God is far more interested in your child's happiness than you ever will be. Okay? You have to remember that. He's far more interested in your child's happiness than you ever will be. Not only that, he can control every circumstance to get them to that place. God will use brokenness. God will use sadness. God will use all sorts of things to bring them to a place where they cry out to him and they need him. If we're not careful, especially in a culture like ours, not just with the wealth of Dallas, but also the Christianity that's all around, if we're not careful, we can essentially eliminate a child's need, or at least a felt need, for God by protecting them from so much. That's a really important thing to remember. When your child is experiencing sadness, and we're just talking about sadness now, don't move quickly towards a quick fix. Let them, with your presence, enter into what's really going on. Sadness could be very temporary. They had a bad day. They got made fun of for something. They didn't make the A team. They didn't get the grade they wanted. A teacher may have shamed them on purpose or unintentionally. They might just be tired. They may feel overwhelmed. Sadness can be, you know, brought on from all kinds of things. They may have a friend who's really struggling. They may not understand something that's going on in the world. One of the people that they admire on TV or music may be doing something that's affecting them. Literally, it could be so many different things. But just because they're sad doesn't mean that they need you to quickly move in and intervene. Don't move so quick to a quick fix. Parenting in the present means you enter in securely in Jesus, knowing that he knows everything there is to know about this child and where they are, and he's going to give you everything you need to enter in. Now, again, right now I'm just talking about sadness. I'm not talking about depression, and there's a difference, and I'll show you what that is in a minute. Okay? Sadness can be a thing that causes us really, and our children, age appropriate, to dig into what's really going on inside. Begin to practice some of the listening skills that we talked about in order to discover what perhaps might be going on underneath the surface. Now, what does that require if you're going to do that with your child who's sad? It's going to require time. And have you got the picture from the 9 weeks we've been together that time is an important part of parenting in the present? It is. Anything that's going to require time because of the fast-paced world we live in is going to feel inconvenient to you because it's going to be. And the idea that if I move into this and I move in fast or quickly or give a quick answer, it'll go away is not necessarily true. It might in the moment. A child might, thank you, mom, thank you, dad, but they might really be thinking, they're not listening to me anyway, they're no help, and they move on. It's going to require time. It's going to require you knowing your children and whether or not you've really gotten to the surface or under the surface. Does that make sense? Okay, I'm going to transition into depression, but before I do, any questions about what I've just said? Most of the time, if it's just sadness, time is going to change that. They're going to move through that. Loving them through it's really important, but most of the time, that's going to change. Now, when it doesn't, it's prolonged, you're probably looking at something a little more significant. And that's what would be called depression. Now, depression is really high in the world we live in today. And there's different forms of depression, okay? I'm going to kind of go through grades. There's mild depression. The difference between depression and sadness is a lot of times you don't know what the source of it is. It's more of a state as opposed to an emotion. I am a person that has a tendency to get depressed in certain seasons. I can't predict it, but I've learned now, I kind of sense when it's coming. And at least at this point, there's no predictability to it. But I know there are times to be alert. Like if I'm coming back from a trip overseas when physically it's, you know, I'm exhausted, maybe mentally and spiritually too, those gauges of life, remember those we talked about? I can be like, yeah, I need to be careful. I need to be paying attention to it. But depression is not something that you can just control. If you don't suffer from depression, you aren't going to get it, okay? If you don't have depression and you just have seasons of sadness but not depression, you're going to think if you just say, stop it, that should work. It doesn't work. Depression is more of a state than it is just an emotion, but it's revealed in emotions. Mild depression, which is what I've experienced, is something that I feel. I'm like, I just feel a little down. I feel a little flat. I can function. I can get out of bed. I can move forward through my day, but it's really there. Now, depression can move from mild, and there's ways to handle that, to a little more severe, to what we call chronic, okay? It's possible, certainly in a room this size, that you have a child or some children that will experience chronic depression. There's no doubt in my mind that with this group right now, some of you have experienced mild, kind of middle, and then maybe even some chronic depression. It is not something to be ashamed of. It's something to be honest about, talk about, because there are lots of ways to get help. And so I want to talk about the chronic depression. What does that look like, and how do you know if your child is experiencing chronic depression? These are some of the signs that you would look for. A child becomes unable to really describe what's going on, but you can tell something's not right. It's not just a mood, but it's now a condition. Hard to motivate for anything, even things that they once really loved. They begin to withdraw from pretty much everything. And there's gonna be some normal parts of that, okay? As they get into the teenage years, you know, Tim Wilson, some of you know Tim and Mona, they have kids that are just a little bit older. So their youngest is our oldest age. They actually graduated together. And then we've got this, you know, little two cabooses at the end. And so Tim and Mona are empty nesters now. That's a long ways away, honey, isn't it? All right. So anyway, we have family fun nights. And that's what we call them. And they're not every week, but, you know, that's what we call them when we have them. Maybe once every month, you know, sometimes twice. Tim said, we don't do those anymore. I said, really? Why? He goes, well, we meet, but we call them forced family outings. So family fun night, FFN, for them is, you know, FFO. It just changed one letter. And that's the reality. So just because your child at 12, 13, 14, 15 doesn't go, family fun time together. Oh, I've got the best parents in the world. Doesn't mean they're depressed. It just means they're normal. Okay, some of this is normal. But when it moves from sporadic to a constant, that's when you begin to realize something might be going on with my child. I'll give you a list of things that you might want to jot down and be thinking of. First, depression, as I mentioned, there's low grade, there's mild, then there's chronic. When you begin to sense it's chronic, first of all, there's a prolonged feeling of sadness. Another way they might describe it is I feel empty. They might be tearful. Now, if they're not criers, they may not cry. But there's just a sense that you understand something's not right. And it's prolonged. Nothing you're saying seems to be giving any encouragement. They're describing a state more than they are an emotion. Does that make sense to everybody? Okay. There's also the reality that, as I mentioned already, they're withdrawing from pretty much everything. And it's not, if they're able to articulate it, it's not that they want to, but it's just that they don't have the energy for it. It's just not there. Now, once again, our temptation is to minimize and to think, well, if they just do this, it'll all be okay. If it's just sadness, that may be true eventually. But if it's more than that, it won't be. And at that point, what you need to do is begin to think about how can we get our child some help? And there's lots of help that's available. So where do you look for help? Well, first of all, if you're a member of our church, or really any church that's centered on the idea of covenant and community, your help comes from a body of people who are like-minded, who love you and love your kid. And we're going to talk about this a lot in a minute when we get into community. But my point is, you need to remember, you're not alone. You're not the first mom or the first dad who has a child that might be experiencing depression. I promise you're not. So there's people within your church that can help. If you're in a church and there's a youth ministry program or children's ministry program, there are people there that can help come alongside. Sometimes they can affirm what they see in your child. They're not necessarily health professionals, but they can affirm what they see in your child. Or you may get a different story, like, you know what, they're actually doing okay. What that means is it may not be as severe as you think. There might be a little bit, it may be something that is happening at home, but outside the home, it doesn't look as severe. That's good information to have. Then there's also counselors. And if you have an issue with seeing a counselor or sending one of your children to see a counselor, it needs to be the right counselor, you need to be concerned about that. There is nothing wrong, and I'm talking about a child that would have depression, with moving them to see someone that has the real skill to evaluate whether or not they're experiencing depression. And if they are, at what level? Is it mild? Is it medium? Or is it chronic? And that's really an important thing to know. Now, where do you find counselors like that? Your church. You ask people who are involved in people's lives, who are Christians, who do they know and who would they recommend? I make referrals almost every day in terms of people that are looking for somebody to help, both inside our church and outside our church. That's a really important dynamic. And some specialize in working with children and adolescents all the way up. Does that make sense? And what happens is you begin to get a sense of assurance. You know, I had a question about one of our kids in terms of depression and anxiety, and I asked my child's permission. She did not want anything to do with going to a counselor. You know why? She didn't want to be labeled. That's okay. You don't have to be. Would you mind if I talked to, and by the way, labeled, not from her friends, but she didn't want a counselor to tell her she had something, right? So I said, would you mind if I spoke to some of my counselor friends on your behalf about what you're feeling? No, not at all. Great. So I did that. The child needs to be ready to go. They need to, in some ways, want to go. But when they're young, that may never happen. So you're the parent. You've got to move in with the proper authority and say, this is what we're going to do. Chances are most students aren't going to go into an office like that, cross their arms and say, I'm not talking to you. They might the first visit, but eventually it's probably going to come out. Counselors are skilled to help pull things out. You'll feel a lot better knowing that there's somebody that's helping you understand the dynamic of where your child is, okay? There's a lot of things, I think, that speak to why depression is on the rise. I was with the superintendent of our school district, three of the principals of the elementary, middle school, and high school yesterday. Dave Reichert was with me. And I walk away so encouraged, and another part of me is so discouraged. Just the pressure to be the very best is toxic, and it's high and strong in the communities we live in. We want to be the very best. At what cost and why? It's really important questions for us to be asking. At what cost and why? John Piper says the reason there's so much depression in one way, it's pretty simple, is people don't sleep. They don't sleep near as much as their bodies need to. And you've heard me talk about that already with the amount of homework required on your children. There's a cost. The expectations are high. Their coaches, their teachers, their youth pastors, their parents, their camp counselors, their tutors, their sports tutors, their musician, it's all there. They all, in a community like ours, and I'd say that's North Dallas, they're all driven towards excellence. At what cost? There is a cost. I'm a big fan of doing the very best you can with what you've been given. I'm a huge fan of that. But there is a cost if we're not careful. And sometimes it's just the physiological reality that your child is so tired, just tired. That can lead to sadness, but it can also lead to depression. I'll stop for a second. Let you ask any question you want. I'm going to talk about suicide for a minute and then move into to community, or anger, then community. Yes?
What did the superintendents and principals have to say about that?
Well, they weren't talking about the issues.
No?
No, that wasn't the purpose of the meeting. No, it was a Central Dads Club meeting. So that wasn't the purpose of the meeting. I'm just saying the takeaway was, as a community, we want our school to be at the top in our state and climbing towards that in the nation. And it doesn't sound bad, you know? It doesn't. I mean, if I was the superintendent, I would think the constituents that I'm serving would want the same thing, so that's what we're going to be about. But I don't think there's very much conversation happening around the idea of, What does telling this group, whether it's academic or athletic or arts, how are they communicating with each other about what are all the demands that we're placing on our children? That conversation is not happening.
No communication about that.
No, it's just not happening. And we can generate that, especially the young parents here. You guys have a chance to speak into that and say, we got to change this a little bit. And not just at the schools, even our churches, right? Even the Christian ministries all around us. There's just so much, and there's a cost. So that wasn't the purpose of that conversation, but I hope it becomes that, you know, because these are good people. They want the best thing, but sometimes we're driven by something without considering the cost. I'm all about going for that, as long as we know what the costs are, and then we're making sure that there's another way of evaluating that. Other questions? Yes, Blake.
hard to talk about Easter without death and resurrection.
Yeah.
You know, my dad passed away when I was young. So when do you introduce sad topics?
It kind of depends on the child. You know, we had a very close friend die a couple weeks ago named David Simpson. I've told you about him, I think. He was our yard man for a number of years, and he's 94. Literally was cutting our yard last summer. I promise I could do it. I'm not mean. He was old man strong, you know, lifting that mower out. And so all of our kids were impacted by his death because they loved him. He was a sweet, sweet part of our family. And Sammy and Esther Kate, you know, 6 and almost 8, are like, where'd he go? What happened to him? He's in heaven. Okay. Very matter of fact. They really believe. It's like, that's great. Esther Kate, about 4 years ago, I remember her saying, Daddy, I don't want to go to heaven. I said, well, why? Tell me what's going on. You know, I mean, I didn't want to say, do you want to go to hell? You know, why, what's going on? And she's like, her view of heaven based on what she had heard just didn't sound fun. Right? Somebody might have said, well, it'll be like a church service. I actually don't want that. That's all it is. It's, you know, and I love our worship, but I'm telling you, it's going to be more than that. I promise it's not one long anthem for eternity. I promise it's not going to be that, okay? And so I begin to use scripture and describe, this is what the word of God tells us. And there's a lot of doesn't, but it does say this. It's beyond what we can even imagine. So Esther Kate, let's imagine. Like, what's the very best we could imagine? You know, and of course, she's talking about amusement parks and all kinds of fun stuff. And being a guest, I said, it's going to be better. It's just going to be better. And then all of a sudden, she's like, oh, I want to go. When do we go? We go when we die, you know, or when Christ returns. So it's okay to begin to introduce it at a young age. They have a way of categorizing it and moving forward. Kara went with us to the memorial service or the funeral. And it wasn't a memorial service, it was a funeral, so the body's present. And they have a viewing during the service. And Kara's 19, and she's like, you know, I don't want to see him. I don't want to do that. Of course, we're not going to make her. So she stayed seated while everybody, you know, and she wasn't the only one. And they moved to the front and saw him. We talk about that. You know, she's like, I'm not really ready to see a body like that. At 10, you know, she may have been a little different, or another child may have been different. You'll know about your own child and what you should do. But introduce death at a young age. It's not there. They're going to hear about it. They're going to be thinking about it. Somebody's going to have a grandparent that died. Things like that. It's good to talk because it's part of life. And you just begin to explain. We have a little book in the bookstore that's in the library that's just about heaven. Great book to read with your children. And their imagination will go. That's a really encouraging thing to do with it. I don't know, Blake, does that help?
Yeah.
Okay. Any other questions on that? Okay, let's talk about suicide then. Suicide's, I mean, it's the worst possible nightmare for any parent in any community, and we've gone through it at our church. And what I want to talk about tonight is that as a parent, you don't need to live in fear that this is going to be your child or this could be your child. You have to live in the truth and honesty of who God is, what God's told us. And here's the truth. He's sovereign. So God knows how long you are going to live. And he knows how long your children are going to live. And he knows how you will die and how they will die. That's just, he either does or he doesn't. And he's sovereign. That's what we believe. Now, I love that about God. But I also want to tell God how I want it to be. I want to go first. Sorry, that's selfish, and I probably will. I mean, you got good genes, babe. You're going to live a long time. My parents both died at 71. You know, I think I'll live longer than that, unless he just wants to wipe me out earlier. But my family doesn't have those kind of genes. My mom was a chain smoker. I've got secondhand smoke issues, I'm sure. But I don't smoke. I'm a much healthier person than they were. But still, I tell God how I want it to go. I've told God, please, and I pray this, and then you would pray it too. Don't let me outlive any of my children. I can't imagine that grief. And I've been with those a lot who haven't had that prayer answered. And it's really, really hard. It's really hard. But I've seen God get people through it in the most amazing ways. So we know what I've said is true about the sovereignty of God. We also know that these horrible things can happen through accidents, through disease, through carelessness and stupidity. But also, there are some that come to a point in their life where they feel like the only way out is to take their own life. And it's very, very hard to understand. So I'm going to give you just a few things, and some of them have been mentioned already with depression, that you would want to pay attention to if your child possessed these things. Number one is, if your child ever talks about it, to you, or you found out they've talked to someone else about it, you need to take it very seriously. So if they've said anything about it, like, I just want to end my life, or I wish, if someone has thought about suicide, they might not tell you that, but they might tell a youth worker that. The youth worker knows the first person they got to call in that situation is you. They would do that. They would simply call and say, this is a conversation we've had. You remember, I don't think I shared this story, but do you remember the three questions? What's wrong? What are you feeling? What should you do about it? A girl named Sharon in our youth group in St. Louis, who's one of our leaders, I mean, just an amazing kid from an amazing family, wanted to talk to me about something. I'll never forget, we're sitting outside her high school, sitting on a bench. And so we start talking. I go through those questions in a very natural way. And about an hour into it, she's revealing that she's having pretty significant suicidal thoughts. Now, as a child, you know, and they always say this, you got to promise me you won't tell my parents. And I always said, I can't make that promise. But you know what? That's not really an issue. Just keep talking. Well, it was an issue, really, but I was able by the Holy Spirit to get them to talk anyway, every time. And so I said, you know what? If we need to tell your parents, we will, but that's not really the issue. Okay, I'll go with you, but what's going on? And then she revealed, I said, we've got to tell your parents. She freaked out. I said, and she literally said, you said you wouldn't tell my parents. I said, I never said that. I've never told any kid that. And we're going to go tell them because I know her dad. I know her mom. They were just horrified. They had no idea. She got help and she's doing amazing. I mean, she's a grown woman now, but that was a real thing for her, okay? Her parents couldn't see that coming, but she was at a moment where that happened. There's real help available. She wasn't even experiencing real chronic depression, but there was a lot going on in her life, and she began to feel suffocated. She just felt like, I can't deal with all of this, and she began to think about it. Here's what happened. She thought about it, then she felt bad about thinking about it. What's wrong with me? All of a sudden, the cycle started going, and she didn't know who she could talk to. Our kids need to have people to talk to. We're going to talk about that in a minute with community. They need people to talk to. She had a youth pastor. She felt she could talk to me. I then quickly went and told her parents, anytime a child expresses any thought about it, you need to take that seriously. Now, you don't need to overreact by throwing them in the car and rushing to the hospital, okay? Unless it is a 911 type situation, and that could happen. But if it's not, enter in slowly, find out exactly what's going on, call somebody that you trust to give you some counsel, and then get them in immediately to see somebody that can help them. If you're afraid that it is imminent, like you're not sure tonight they wouldn't do it, you do need to go to the hospital. You need to take them and get somebody to go with you, okay? That's really, I'm not trying to scare you, I'm just saying this is the reality. Second of all, if they haven't said anything to you, but you're noticing some of those signs of depression that I mentioned, but then a few other things like a preoccupation with death, or you come across some art and it's really dark, or poetry and it has to do with death, those are signs that you might pay attention to. All right, just tell me about this. What's going on? Now, I'm not talking about snooping. You know, that could create a whole other list of dynamics. But if you see something and you're sensing this is pretty dark, you need to engage that. A couple other signs that are present, again, disinterested in everything, withdrawing from even friendships that they would normally have, and really a radical shift in who they have been. That's one of the big signs. Along with that, outbursts, anger, irrationality, that can all be present there. And one other sign is when they began to give things that matter to them away. Now, a child can have a neat heart that suddenly is generous. So if they're suddenly showing love to a sibling, and it might just be that they're being kind and generous and growing in the Lord. Doesn't mean that they're suddenly having crazy thoughts, okay? But if there are all these other factors that they begin to move forward with, you know, distributing things and talking about giving things away, that's something that you need to pay attention to, okay? Every parent that's in here is like, I don't even want to imagine that happening. Well, you shouldn't. I'm not telling you that so you can begin to meditate on that and imagine that. That's not the point. But I would be doing a disservice if I didn't say, from my perspective and what you can read much of this online even, don't do that, by the way. That's not good. It'll only freak you out. These are things that are just there and they're present. They're the things that we would train our youth staff with. If a child ever said this or showed these things, this is what you need to do. And when that happens, again, you move towards community. You move towards engaging people that you trust that would give you very good counsel. And then you begin to follow through those steps that would be necessary. Not every child that takes their own life probably really wanted to take their own life. Okay? So this is important. Be careful about what you have around the house in terms of weapons and things like that that kids could get to. Kids can have extreme irrational moments because of what's going on inside them physiologically. If that happens, if there's accessibility to things, that can be really, really dangerous. Now, we childproof our homes with little latches and stuff. I'm not suggesting that if you've got teenagers or high school students that you should go home and childproof your home where you take every prescription out of the house and, you know, every aerosol can and, you know, that's not really practical. But I will tell you, guns that they have access to, even if it's their own gun, is stupid. It's just stupid. Even if they know, but no, they've been trained. I'm telling you, in an irrational moment of anger or despair, you're not gonna survive a mistake if you grab something that could take your life, if you're just handling it when you're in that mood, okay? It's very, very important to be really smart about that. I would not do it. I would not have guns like that in my house where my kids could get to, no matter what age. I don't care if they hunt. I don't care if they're a marksman. They need to be where only you can give it to them so that you can know that they're in the right state of mind so they just don't have access to it. Does that make sense? I'm convinced because of some of my experiences that most likely, you know, sometimes a child really probably wasn't in that frame of mind, you know, to ultimately do it, but accessibility was there and suddenly something really tragic happens. All right, I'm gonna stop for a minute. I know this is heavy, but it's real. Questions? Helpful or just flat out discouraging and you're ready to go home? Yeah. So again, I said this before, go back and look at your yearbook, one of the best books ever written on parenting, and remember who you were like, what you were like. If your mom and dad or one of them is still alive, call and ask them, hey, was I ever? And just see what they say. If they start laughing, you know, they're okay. So a lot of that's normal, all right, for girls and boys, actually. Boys manifest it a little differently. They become maybe even kind of a, you know what I mean? It's like my son. Today, before he came, he's asleep. You know, it's, you know, 4:45 maybe or so. And I'm like, Caden, you okay? I'm like, uh-huh. I'm like, are you sure? Yeah. Are you tired? Mm-hmm. Hello, buddy. McFly, Pulse, you there? Yeah, I'm good. All right. And he is. But I'd love to have had a little more, you know, sense of, you doing all right? He's just tired, right? Physically tired. He's doing fine. My girls, I mean, I don't know what I'm going to come home to. I mean, it's like, whoa, you know, excited. And then an hour later, tears. Why are you crying? Taylor Swift's not going to make an album for a while. Good. Oh, wait. This. So it is going to be like this. It's just going to. That doesn't mean there's anything really wrong. It's very normal. That's why community is so important, because you can ask another mom who's like, oh, yeah, totally like that. Another mom be like, that's not my daughter. My daughter's really, really steady. Nothing wrong with that either. But the normal reality, for especially for adolescents, pre-adolescence, is really, you know, up and down, kind of nutty. For example, this is a great one. All right, they're talking to you, and it just looks like the world's falling apart. And you're in a conversation, and you're scared even, because you're like, golly, this sounds pretty dark. And all of a sudden, they look, because their phone makes a noise. And they smile, and they write something back. And then you're like, who's that? So-and-so. Oh. Then the phone rings. Hey! And they're like happy as ever, talking. And then I've literally said, who is that? Like, not on the other end of the line, but who is the child that we've called our own? Okay? That's pretty normal. You know, it's just the reality of a changing body, a changing mind, changing heart and soul, moving and transitioning, all very, very normal. So what you're paying attention to is the consistency of that which seems so neurotic and inconsistent and up and down. If that suddenly changes, and I don't mean because of maturity, like, oh, you know, I've learned so much about how to control this craziness, but it changes to where it's just flat and withdrawn, that's when I would be more concerned. You know, the stuff that's driving you crazy with the, you know, highs and lows, I think that's pretty normal. Does that help? Okay. Yes?
We talked about managing friend groups a little bit early on, and I guess the temptation to try and manage their friends to a really macro level. But what do you start seeing depression in people that are hanging out with, or what you think may be depression that people are hanging out with, and the influence that could have on your child?
Yeah, that's a great question, and it leads to a broader discussion, of, especially as your kids get older, of wanting your child, who maybe is healthy, being an influence on a child that's maybe not. You know, and there's a fear there, because there's a cost. Again, going back to parenting in the present, the idea is, okay, we've got to trust the Lord and his sovereignty in terms of the way he's put this together. And Lord, give me wisdom about what should be happening here. And you need to pay attention to your instincts, right? If you've got a bad feeling about what's going on, take it to the Lord. God, is this my flesh fear response, or is this the Holy Spirit giving me wisdom? He can tell you that. He may tell you through conversations or through time and waiting, but he can reveal to you. But if you have an instinct that, or one of you do, you or your wife, have an instinct that's like, I don't know, this doesn't feel right, you need to analyze that. You know, you need to process that. And sometimes, we've had that, haven't we, honey? You know, you're just like, she feels one way, I feel another. Let's give it a little time. Let's pray. Let's get a sense. Time will help you discern, and the Holy Spirit will help you discern, and talking to other people will help you discern, what should we do here? And I would enter into a conversation with my child. Tell me about so-and-so. You know, how are they? What's going on? Now, if your child, you sense, is beginning to protect them in a way, that'd be a little bit of a red flag. Like, are you trying to hide something from either their behavior or something that's going on that's maybe private? You know, just try to fish there a little bit and figure out what exactly is taking place so that you know how to shepherd your own child through that. Children who are depressed, who may be dark like that, need people who aren't, who can give them hope. It's very possible that the Lord would use your child to be a means of encouragement for that child. So we don't all want to retreat and, you know, get into a holy huddle where none of that stuff exists. First of all, that isn't true. It exists everywhere. But you have to pay attention to those instincts you have. Enter into it. Don't be afraid to enter into the conversation. Encourage your child to tell you more. And I don't want to use the word force, but, you know, there's a point where, like, you know, I'm not sure I can let you hang out if I really don't know all that's going on here. Now, I'm going to go to a different level with this. If you as a parent sense something in another child that isn't right, like you have a sense as a dad that something's broken here, after praying about it, seeking some counsel, probably with your wife, you know, I would lean in to that parent and just say, you don't know, if you don't know them at all, I know it's awkward, but say, hey, you know, how are things going? You know, and you may be like, it's none of my business. Maybe it isn't, but maybe it is. Maybe that's exactly what that parent needs to hear, just to know. And sometimes they'll be wrong, you know. Yeah, you might be wrong. They're like, oh, he's just downcast or whatever. But you may be right. There may be something that they're not even aware of. It's an important part to be prepared to enter in that way as a community, even if they're not close to you. Does that make sense? That's a great question. Yes.
What about identifying academic pressure and pressures in the middle school boy who perhaps you start to see sadness and it's hard to discern between, is it just so much academic pressure that you really can't think and can't work? Or is it just middle school boy? You have more experience with middle school boy.
Yeah, it's true. And you're going to see changes as they change. Our son, who's a freshman, his grades took a dip big time this last fall. I mean, like, whoa. Okay, you're going to drop out? I mean, what's going on? Until I heard Walter Kelly say, not because of my son, we've got an issue with freshman boys. The transition from the middle school to the high school is not going well academically consistently now for 3 or 4 years. We've seen this sharp drop. I mean, it's big. Like, the average is like 72 in these classes, you know, and below 70 is failing. It's like, well, that's a problem, you know. So what are we doing about it? How are we talking about it? And then you just do the physiology of it. You know, you go back and look at how many of them are playing football? How many of them are doing other sports, even besides that? How many of them, you know, also it's like there's a lot going on. And the classes are hard, okay? And their bodies are changing. There's a lot of dynamics there. I'm not trying to imply it's simple. It's not. But with your own child, what you're trying to discern is, are they just being lazy? Do they care? Are they apathetic? Do they just feel like, I got this, it's not going to be a big deal? What's going on there? And you have to just know your child. You got to enter into that and figure out what will motivate them. Do they need help? Do they need tutors? Do they have an issue that might be medical? You know, you have to kind of evaluate all that stuff. My sense is that most parents probably don't engage at that level. They just want the quick fix, which is get it together, start doing this, and it'll all work out. Maybe, but it's quite possible that it's a little more complex than that. And that's where it takes time, because you got to go in and engage that together and figure that out. We did. We had to do that. It's like, okay. And you know what? We're going to talk about community in a minute. One of the most important things for me is to realize, oh, everybody's kind of in this boat. Now, you've got the one star or two or 10 or whatever it is that's easy for them. You know, and that's okay. That's not normal. That's wonderful. But I was encouraged. It sounds bad. I was encouraged that so many were struggling because, okay, it's not just us. There's other things going on. So it's not just him. Does that make sense? So trying to identify, work with the teachers. You know, when they get to the high school, they will tell you, and the teachers will tell you, it's between us and your kid. Now, it's been very hands-on with the parents engaged. Now it's us and the kids. That's neat and everything, right? But the truth is, parents will respond to you. You know why teachers are saying that, though? It's because of us. It's because of the helicoptering. It's because of the way we've treated them. There's a reality to kids need to learn to talk to their teachers. But you know what? They want to help. They want your child to succeed. So you need to engage in that. You tell your child you're going to do that. They'll say, you're not supposed to do that. Okay, thank you for that. That's helpful. And then I do it anyway. That's really, really important. And every time that we've done that, the teachers have not felt threatened, but they've been encouraged. I think a lot of times they feel threatened. They've been encouraged. They want to help. What do you see going on? You know, is there anything we don't see? Are they sleeping in class? Are they not turning in assignments? You know, whatever. I don't know if that answered your question, but there's a lot there to unpack. Okay. Let's talk about community. Part of the beauty of getting together like this is I hope you have felt that you're not alone, whether, like Paige, you're expecting your first, or you're close to being an empty nest, or you already are, and you're thinking about your grandkids or your adult children. Community is essential to what it means to raise our children. It's essential for us to be in community. It's essential for them to be in community. But community is one of those words that churches use a lot, and I'm not sure we really know what it is, okay? In fact, I'll tell you what it's not. It's not a Bible study. It's not a small group that talks about the Bible. A community is not just a group that gets together because they like each other. That may give signs of community. It might look like community, but it's not community. Community is very, very different. It may do those things. It may talk about the Bible. It may talk about life, but it's different. So I'm going to give you some signs of a healthy community. And I really want you to think about these because I want you to be asking the question, am I in one? Do I have one? So if this is what a healthy community looks like, first, you are known and you know others. Now, there's a difference between being known and knowing about someone, okay? It is not a community when you know somebody likes the Sooners more than the Longhorns. It's not community when you know somebody really likes to eat this kind of food or that kind of food. Community is not knowing things about each other. Community is when you are known and you know the others. And what that means is you're safe. You are safe to tell the people in that community everything that is going on in your life. Now, immediately, that generates what inside us? What emotion?
Insecurity,
fear. Really the same thing. However, in Christ, you know what it ought to generate? Freedom. Freedom. Just as all things because of the fall have been perverted, community is too. We can be around people for so long, know so much about them, but not really be known. Skip Ryan was a great example. He would say the very same thing if he was standing here. He was with us day in and day out, knew a lot about him. But until the wheels came off, he wasn't really known. And then he was really known. I love that man. We have such a great relationship. I could do the same thing with the guys that I walk with. Know a lot about them, know a lot about me, but not be known. Community is when you are known and you know others. What that means is if you're in community as it comes to your kids, you don't have to pretend that it's going well. You don't have to be ashamed if it really is. In a community, you can say, right now, this is where we are. Going back to how I ask you to think about the emotions in your life right now. Every one of us, we're studying whether it's safe to say this is exactly how I feel or not. Being in community, you're in a place that has grown and developed primarily through freedom in Christ and the understanding of brokenness and sin, where you can say, this is who I am. This is where we are. This is what's going on. And I know I'm safe here. Is there a risk? Of course there is, because we live in a fallen world. Is there a risk that you will be judged? Of course there is. Is there a risk that you'll be gossiped about? Of course there is. Is it worth the risk? Of course it is. Because the risk of not doing that is what? You keep it all to yourself. You got to continue to put up the pretense that everything's okay. We don't need that. We need real community. We need real community where we are known and others know us and we know them. Secondly, you're loved and you love others. Period. Unconditionally. We're either motivated by love or motivated by fear in every relationship. I mean, when you get to a place where you're in community and you really, I mean, you love the people you're in community with, it's life-changing. And when they love you, because it goes back to the first thing I said, you're free. And that is one of the hardest things for a city like ours, because we're so afraid of our reputation being stained or tainted or people thinking ill of us. Well, if that's true, let's go back to the I formation. The opinion of other people about you is your idol. You truly aren't living out the security that you are offered in Jesus. You are saying, I believe in Jesus and the security I have in him, but I also need something else. And what I need is your approval of me. You know, that is nasty. And that trickles down from us to our kids. And they follow us in that pattern. And then they're not as free. It's really, really important that we seek to create those kind of communities where we're known and we know others, where we're loved and we love others. A couple more things. I've kind of mentioned this, but another way of saying it is you are safe in this community to be who you are and to share all the things that are going on in your life without reservation. Now, wouldn't that be amazing? You know, there's going to be some reservation, but the truth is, if you're in the right kind of community, that exists. Now, some of you, I think, right now are going, that's not even realistic. Yes, it is. I've been in those. I'm in one. It exists. There's always risk because we're living this side of heaven. But this is what we should be fighting for. This is what the church, how many churches are in Dallas? Trick question. There's one. Okay, that's it. There's just one. Jesus is the head of it. Isn't that great? So glad it's not me. One church. This is what the church should be great at. You know what the problem with the church is? People. Us. This is what we need the church to do really well. To live out the reality of what it means to have this one primary identity. And as a believer living this side of heaven, these are the struggles that we're having. There's so much freedom to be able to say that. You'll find it. Okay? A couple more things. I love this stuff. In community, you are receiving Christ-centered support, prayer for whatever issues you're experiencing, sound advice and counsel, and it's available 24/7. Not just in crisis. We're good at that. We're so good at that as a church. But it's available 24/7 constantly. And so what that means is we are a part of, or we are creating, moving towards this type of community for the sake of Christ. We are in community living for Christ that others might live. And the others in this case happen to be our children. So what does that look like? First question. How many of you, just curious, are in some form of a small group that until I just described community, you would have said it was a community? Raise your hand. Some form of a small group, but raise them high. I want to see, because that's exactly what I thought. Most people are in one way or another. I want you to think about your own experience with that. Is that really, does that exist? In some cases, it probably does. In other cases, you're like, we've got some work to do. Great. Go do that work. If you go back to that group and say, this is what Mark said about community. It was pretty interesting. I think this is what we should do. And people are like, no way. Divorce yourself from that community. I mean it. If they're unwilling, you don't, that's really a waste of time. That is a waste of time. Unless you feel called to change it, it's time to move on. Go and create this kind of thing I'm talking about. My guess is that whatever group you're already in, those people are going to want the same thing you are longing for. They're just like you, waiting for someone to say, let's do this. Waiting for somebody to say, okay, that's enough of the fluff. You know, I know a lot about you. I know where you work. I kind of have an idea of how much money you make. I Googled you. You know, I know what's going on. It is time to move in and read what's going on today. How can I really pray for you? Guys, this stuff is beautiful. And when that happens and that freedom begins to exist in community, our kids will feel that too. Because that's the kind of community they need to be in. They've got to do it in age-appropriate ways, of course. But that's what they need to see. Now, I really want you to think about this. What forces are coming against you right now that are causing you to say, on one hand, I love this idea. Another hand, it's like, I'm not going there. I mean, I like the one we have. We'll just change the name. We won't call it community anymore. Think about that. Because I know as a man, those forces are coming at us. It's like, that's just too risky. And you know what? It is risky. I'm not going to deny that. But the risk of not doing that is far, far greater than the risk of doing that. The reason I'm ending here is because this is what the enemy wants to keep us from pursuing. He does not want us. There is power. When Hillary Clinton said, brilliantly, by the way, it takes a what to raise a child? A village. It was the best statement I think I've ever heard on what we as a church practice called the covenant. As a church, when a child's baptized, we say with one voice, we will assist the parents and the spiritual nurture of these children. I love that about our church. How are we going to do it? One of the best ways we can do it is by being in communities where we have each other. We know each other. We love each other. We're praying for each other. Where together we can say, wow, I'm not sure what to do. Let's figure this out together. That's complex. And then we do it in community. And it's amazing to watch.